And it's time for the shooting bench. If political incorrectness offends you, or if you don't like guns, or if you don't believe our government is corrupt enough to compare to 1938 Nazi Germany, this may not be the show for you, because for the next 2 hours, that's all we're going to talk about. You need to understand that there's a storm coming. You need to understand that the storm is building strength. And most of all, you need to understand that
we are the storm.
But we have to stop looking for salvation in this system. The system is not going to fix itself. If the system is restored, it will be restored with the hammer of patriotism smacking this system out between the anvil of freedom and teaching this system that there is a shape we wanted to maintain. And that we have the forge of rage, and we will put that system in that forge of rage, and we will use that hammer of liberty and pound it against the anvil of freedom until it returns to the shape we want it to be in.
And here we are, and welcome to the shooting bench. It is the 30th of December. We're just about down to the last day here. Obviously, we won't have a show on New Year's evening, which is Wednesday, but I may sneak a surprise one in for you on Thursday, because I don't want to mess up Liberty Lounge, and we have so much to talk about. But I'll let you know. Watch the chat room, the Facebook page and everything, and I'll let you know for sure. But we've got a lot to talk about tonight. This is a... stand by a minute. We got something going on outside. I'll be right back. Okay, I got that resolved. Let me catch my breath here a little bit, and we'll get back on with what we're doing. I had a whole lot of stuff. I actually still do have a whole lot of stuff that I wanted to go over tonight. But right now, I think that the most important thing to go over, and it may, I don't know how much of the show it's going to take, because I haven't practiced this, rehearsed it. I just took a few notes, and we need to talk about it, and that is, of course, the church shooting that went on in Texas yesterday. Fortunately, we had a surveillance video of the entire thing. I am also fortunate enough to have a friend in Thailand who sent me a high-resolution copy of that so I could really analyze this thing, and there's a lot of training issues here to talk about. I think I mentioned before I get into this, I'm sorry, I'm kind of out of breath here. I was working on some stuff. Before I get into this, I talked a little bit a while ago, and I don't remember how far I got. So let me go over this one more time. Normally we'd have a show on Wednesday night, but this Wednesday is New Year's. I'm not going to do it Wednesday, and we have prior plans for New Year's Eve. So I may try to sneak one in out of schedule on Thursday. If not, I may go over time on my show Friday, because there's a lot of stuff that's timely right now that I need to get out here in the next few days. Excuse me. Dang it. I'm sorry about that. So anyway, let's talk about this church shooting. A lot of stuff going on about this. A lot of stuff going on also still about what's going on in Virginia. Very briefly, let's talk about Virginia first, because it won't take too long. We've talked a number of times already about, you know, the new, you know, Civil War 2.0 starting there, new revolution, blah, blah, blah. Okay, yeah, it might. I don't know. It's entirely possible right now. What is not possible, I won't say it's not possible, I'll say what is grossly unlikely, the UN is not coming. They're not hiring new troops to disarm the UN. Number one, the governor has no authority to call them in. End of story. That's the end of my comments right there. The governor has no authority to do that. Number two, the UN has no authority, no law enforcement authority. So this is not going to happen. They're not training people to disarm Americans. Is anybody really dumb enough to think that just because somebody has put a photoshopped ad on, what the hell am I trying to say, on the internet, that I shouldn't say that. Let me rephrase that. Let me rephrase that, because there's a lot of people that are genuinely concerned, and I don't mean to disparage them by saying that, and I apologize for that. It looks very realistic. The UN is not hiring officers off the internet to disarm Americans. That is, you know how well that would go over if that was real? Now, you remember we talked about this back in 2013, 2014, exact same thing, exact same ad. I think it's just been redated and put back on there. But this has been out there for a long, long time. And I get flustered about it because there's so many hoaxes and so much BS on there. And, you know, unsuspecting people, everybody doesn't have time to research stuff. And you know, we there's things on there that we want to believe. We do believe because it's kind of aligned with the way we think, or the way we think things ought to be, or the way we think things are going to be, whether we like it or not. And that doesn't necessarily make them true. So it takes some research. It's aggravating that we have to do that, but we have to do that. You know, we've got to research this stuff. Every time you see a new meme on Facebook and you say, oh no, the space monkeys are coming to steal our parakeets or whatever. And you know, it's our data and whatever. But just because you saw that on the internet doesn't necessarily mean that space monkeys are coming to steal our parakeets next week. Okay, do some research. It's not hard to do. It only takes a little while. And be part of the solution by informing other people what some of these things are. You know, what, you know, spread the truth. Don't accept some of these rumors and hoaxes and some of them just downright absolute lies, and then turn right around and spread them thinking it's the truth. In this day and age, it is so easy to use Photoshop and sound editing software and stuff to make anything sound or look like anything. And it is virtually unlimited right now. So you never really know. It takes a lot of research. And even those of us that do research get fooled sometimes. It's difficult. It's aggravating. It is what it is. So anyway, let's move on to the shooting in Texas. It was a grand demonstration of what a good guy with a gun can do. This guy walked in. There's two segments of this story here, so stand by for the second one. But this guy walks in and walked over the corner and talked to a guy for a second, and turned around, pulled a sawed-off shotgun out from under his coat, boom, knocked the one guy down. He's dead pretty much on impact. And I'm not sure yet. I think the second one may have died. And there was a firearms instructor, as we find out later, was part of the volunteer private security team. That excellent shot. This guy was I'm sure he was 50 or 60 feet away. Room full of people. They're panicking, screaming, carrying on. And this guy makes a dead-on headshot at that range under those kind of conditions. Excellent performance. The guy's down, and then all of a sudden you see all these other guys, and the old guns pop out from everywhere. You know, there's six, seven, eight guys around there that's got guns. And at that point, some of the people are disparaging the other ones for, oh yeah, they just heard the shots and they want to pull the gun out and get a piece of the action. Well, you know, that's not necessarily true. It may have been the case for a couple of them. I don't know. But, number one and first and foremost is you don't know that that's the only guy. If the first shooter is concentrating on his target and making sure he's down. You know, if there's another one close that can help him, you know, assist him, back him up, that's fine. But other people need to be watching other people. It is a very common and devastating mistake to assume that this is the only guy. So if everybody's attention is focused on him and somebody stands up in the back there with a, you know, an AK-47 pistol or another short-barreled shotgun or something like that, then, you know, they're going to get everybody that's big enough to die. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. I don't know their attitudes. I don't know what they were thinking, but I won't sit here and say that they were wrong. So, good shot. Put the guy down right away. And the guy went up there disarming. Now, we find out later, and I think I may have already said this, that the guy is an ex-deputy or police cop of some kind, and a firearms instructor outside of his law enforcement duties. So that kind of helps explain the good shot and the quick thinking. Now, he was watching this guy from the beginning and thought, you know, something's not right with this guy. So, hang on just a second. Hold on. Stand by. All right, I'm back. I had to clear my throat there a little bit. I'm getting kind of choking in you guys' ear here. So, I hate armchair quarterbacks, okay? And I don't want to seem like that, but I need to tell you a couple of things here about this that I think probably should have been done a little bit differently. And I don't want to take anything away from this guy that did a wonderful job. He was fast. He was accurate. Did a great job. Hooray. He's a hero. I believe that, and I support him 100%. But let me tell you something that may have avoided this. The guy walks in to a church in Texas wearing a long coat and a hood. Keeps the hood on all the time that he's in, walks all the way to the front of the church. That is what they call in law enforcement a clue. Something is not as it should be here. At that moment, now I'll tell you, there was no communication with this security team. Whether they had ever trained together or practiced together, I don't know. But if you'll notice, because this guy was allowed to get over there unaccompanied, it doesn't mean that you have to. You know, in our program that we wrote up for church security, we don't want to go and make them feel uncomfortable or, you know, maybe he's just cold. But we can't take that chance. So we talk to them, stay close to them. Can I help you? Are you new here? You know, what's your name? Are you, you know, you staying? You just here visiting relative? Whatever. Just make small talk. Stay close to him. If that would have happened, this shooting quite possibly may not have happened at all. But if you'll notice in the video, if you notice in the video, the first guy that he shot, you know, the guy pulled the gun out, and here's this guy struggling, working to try to find his gun and get it pulled out. Didn't make it. I think the same was true for the second guy. I've talked about this countless times for women that drop guns in the bottom of a purse, or for men that have little pocket pistols in the bottom of deep trouser pockets with all their keys and pocket knife and chapstick and pocket lint, coat pockets, things like that, wearing garments that you can't quickly clear to get to your gun. This is what happened because everybody thinks it's not going to happen to them, but they want to carry that gun just in case it does. Well, it did, and you couldn't get to your gun, and now you're dead. And understand, please, one more time, that I am not disparaging these guys. I am, every single shooting, every event, every time you feed a horse, every time you open a gate, every time you can a jar of pickles, there are two sides. There's a person to look at it and say, that was excellent job. Those are fine pickles. And another person walked up to me and said, they are. Damn sure they're fine pickles. However, there's one thing you could have done to make it just a little bit better, or a little bit easier, or a little bit safer, or make the color better, or the taste richer, or something like that. Every single thing that happens in your life has someone that's going to see it as flawless, and someone else that's going to see it as, whether either one of them is right or wrong is irrelevant. But there's always going to be somebody to see a different side. I see a different side. From a training aspect, from a tactical standpoint, there were some things here that I think could have been done different. The security team had no communication. They had not worked together. The two that were sitting on the bench over there, one stood up, the other one was sitting, had not prepared or planned for this. They were the closest to him. They should have been all over him. With all that being said, again, 6 seconds, it was all over. Outstanding work. However, good people died because of it. Either one or two, I'm not sure. Possibly, if this was done a little bit differently, no one might have died except the bad guy. The bad guy may have said, you know, being a bad guy today is just not a good idea. You know, I think I'll just chill out and just kind of ease out later on when nobody's looking and go somewhere else. And on the one hand, you can say, yeah, that would have been ideal to get him out of here, get him away from our people, protect our congregants here. On the other hand, if he didn't want to do it there, might he have just gone down the street and done it in a kindergarten or somewhere else? You don't know. So, since you don't have any idea what he's thinking, you can't just take him into custody because he might be a bad guy. We have to wait until he either gives up, walks away, or makes a move, and then you shoot him in the face, which is what happened here. dang it, sorry. 242 people in that church. And there, another thing I noticed here was muzzle discipline, especially for the one guy in the back towards the center of the screen, kind of heavy guy. His muzzle discipline was dangerous. Now, I couldn't tell what his trigger finger was doing, but he wasn't being safe with that muzzle. He was excited, which is understandable. And again, I really hate to be critical, but maybe it's better to put it this way. Instead of seeming critical of them, saying that they should have done better, maybe I can say this in such a way that I see a different way of doing it that you might do if you have the opportunity. This is every event like this is a training event. It's a training situation, a training moment. And when these things happen, we can look at them and say, wow, that was good. I wonder if they'd have done something different if we'd had a different outcome. Well, I'm one of those guys. I think if it was done a little bit differently, it would have had a different outcome. And I know there are people out there with pitchforks and torches that are going to burn me to the ground, but you know, it's the way I feel. Sorry about that. Private security team, great idea. If you're going to have a private security team in your church, they have to communicate. You can't just take 6, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 12 guys, random dudes with carrying guns. Okay, we got all these CCWs in here. It's not about a CCW. We saw what happened to her. We didn't hear a secondhand story from a news reporter. We watched it. And we saw how communication or lack of what happens when there's no communication? Had this have been a little bit different, there had been good communication, maybe, possibly, the guy back there in the van, the one guy, God bless him, he was on top of it. He was watching that guy from the beginning, and his response was fast and final. very good, did a great job. All the security team, they were, like I said, they were volunteers. They were not hired. They were members of the church, number one, and they were volunteers. As I started to say a while ago, this is not just about a CCW. Everybody says, oh, yeah, take a class, get a CCW, and be part of the solution. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be part of the solution because you have a CCW. You have to get some training. You have to not practice, not standing out on flat level ground shooting at paper targets that are not particularly mad at you. We're not talking about shooting practice. We're talking about training in tactics and movements and shooting while moving, shooting something that is moving, shooting something that is moving while moving, shooting something from different positions, one hand, then the other hand. Malfunction clearing with one hand since you're wounded and the other arm is useless. I mean, there's a million different things that you can go over and make this work out. You know, give yourself a better chance in dire circumstances like this. So the minister, great guy, sounded like he was very much in favor, in support of all these people. You know, he said, thank the government for letting us have this right. Well, we all know that that's not true. We can't blame him for that. It's an education thing. The government didn't give you the right. The government allowed you to exercise a right, turned it into a privilege. However, whatever it was, it worked. The people had the guns. They solved the problem. And people all over the world have seen the results of a good guy having a gun stopping a bad guy with a gun. So, and by the way, Texas law just allowed carry in church. That law went into effect on September 1st of this year. Now, would these guys have been carrying had the law not passed? Yeah, I'm thinking they might have. That would be my guess. And rightfully so, they should have been. But, you know, there's states all over. When I was in, I believe it was in Virginia. Well, I know in Virginia years ago, I'm not sure if you could carry the church. Well, back then, they didn't even have any concealed carry laws, so probably not. But even then, you were not allowed to hunt on Sundays. And I think it was just this year, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was just this year that they changed that law and allowed people to hunt on Sundays. You know, this is not the government's responsibility to choose which day you want to hunt. If you want to hunt on Sunday because you work 6 days a week and you need to feed your family, that's between you and God. That's not between you and the government. If you are, say, a Seventh-day Adventist, or if you're an atheist, or if you're a Muslim, or if you're a whatever, a pagan, and then what difference does it make to you, or why should it make any difference to the government if you hunt on Sundays? Same thing with carrying in church, you know, to a certain degree. So, anyway. But, you know, a lot of these things was, I'm not going to tear the pastor apart for saying that, because it's a common misconception. It's a lack of education. Our public schools are woefully inadequate in that department. We've seen that with President Trump. He was all for supporting red flag laws, and then somebody put a bug in his ear and he got educated, and here 2 or 3 months ago he said, no, we're not. I do not support red flag laws. And this shooting right here may help him to understand further why it is. I think he is strictly a lack of education is some of the, why he says some of the things that he does. I think it's a lack of education that caused him to ban bump stocks. I don't think it was stupid of him. I think it was because he didn't know. And I can actually see this thing being reversed here in the next whatever period of time. By him, not by you know, some other president. But I don't know. It, you know, it's just my just a theory. We'll see what happens. But anyway, there's let's see. Okay, there's some other things here. I'm going to go over this. I'm going to take a little break here. And there's some other things I want to go over concerning this same thing here in Texas. So if you'll stand by with me just a minute, we'll take a little break here, 4 or 5 minutes, and we'll be back.
I'll be back.
You packed your bags and shut the door. You crossed the sea to fight a war. You didn't know just what would happen to you. Stepped in the dirt, boots on the ground, and gunfire was the only sound. And to yourself you whispered, hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. Every day and every night, you walk the walk, you fight the fight. You never saw the end inside, now did ya? The tears are washing, a haze of red, the blood, the mud, too many dead. Your weary soul is crying, hallelujah, hallelujah.
Nobody will stand with you if you don't stand. God can't stand with you if you don't stand. And don't stand and then sit down. It's worse. It sets a precedent. You know, count the cost. The cost may be dear. It may be everything. It may be your life. Okay? But unless we're willing to value freedom more than our lives, do we really deserve freedom? God can't stand.
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
with a man until the man stands. And so God is waiting for us to stand. And at that moment that when he stands, God could stand with him. And then the other thing is that people could stand with him. You know, nobody can stand with you until you stand.
All right. We're back. Another thing I saw today repeatedly concerning this shooting in Texas is, and this kind of goes along with what I was saying a while ago, numerous people said, well, it's Texas. You know, what do you expect? That's what Texans do, weren't they? They said, well, it was Texas. And I kept saying, well, what does Texas have to do with it? Well, we've got more guns. We've got more CCWs. We do it. It's in our blood. Okay, yeah. I get that. It's nice to be proud of your state, but let's don't get crazy with it. One of the things that we have more CCWs in our state than anybody. Well, two things wrong with that. Number one, no, you don't. You can look at it as more CCWs in your state. That doesn't mean anything because we need to know how many people in your state. You know, if you say, well, there's more CCWs in Los Angeles than there is Lone Tree, Wyoming. Well, I don't doubt that. The population in Lone Tree, Wyoming is 5. So that doesn't tell me anything. What I want to know is per capita. How many people out of the number of people there have CCWs? If 5 people in Lone Tree, Wyoming have, now it may be more than 5 now, it was 5 years ago when I was there, but if there's 5 people in Lone Tree, Wyoming that have CCWs, that's 100% of the population. This is very good. If 700 people have CCWs out of 16 million or whatever it is, I don't know what the population of Los Angeles is, 16 is bigger than 5. But 0.0017% is not bigger than 100%. So we need to know per capita. So I did a little research. I checked on this. Number one, no, Texas does not have the most CCWs. Actually, Florida does. Florida has 1,784,395 permits out of a population of 21,646,155. Okay, if you look at the percentage here, this is not per capita. I guess I didn't really. It's 8.24% of the population. That's not per capita. I'm not, you know, there's not 1 in 3 or whatever. I didn't take the time to figure all that out. I don't even know if I'm smart enough to figure all that out. But anyway, it's 8.24% of the population have CCWs. This, like I said, this information is probably a year old, so it's pretty accurate. The second highest number of permits is Pennsylvania. In the whole United States, Pennsylvania is second highest. 1,275,000 permits out of a population of 12,813,969 people. 12,813,969. For a percentage of 9.9, for near 10% of the population has CCWs in Florida. Outstanding. Texas, on the other hand, highest population of all these states, 29,087,070 people. Not almost 30 million, but pretty close. And out of that 29 million people, 1,200,746 people have permits for a grand total of, drum roll please, 4.1%. So, number one, no, it does not have the most permits. Number two, it does not even have the most permits per capita or percentage of the population. So, out of the 5 states that I did, Arizona with a very modest 325,421 permits out of a population of 7,171,646 has 4.5%. So we have 0.4% of our population more has permits than Texas here in Arizona. Now, I did Colorado because of similar land mass, population not too far. Let's see, population is just under 6 million, 5,695,000 people in Colorado. 388,646 of them have permits. So a few less people, a few more permits, and I didn't write this down, but as I recall, as I figured this, it was 6-point-something percentage, percent of the people have CCWs. So, not to disparage Texas, like I said, I love Texas, but it just because it is Texas doesn't mean that that's a, just because you're not Jim Bowie, you're not John Wayne or anybody just because you're from Texas. But that's what we've got there so far. All right, and I think that's, well, let's go over something that I've talked about a few times. While we're on this subject, I just posted a couple of things today concerning church shooting. Now, one of them I've posted before. I wrote it about a year ago, and I think that's about when I posted it. It's something about how safe, I think it says, how safe is your church in tumultuous times? And it was received very well. I got a lot of, you know, it's on my blog, and it's also on Brubaker Arms Manufacturing's blog. And it's been exceedingly well received for all the information that's on it. Well, I wrote that in response. Excuse me, my goodness. I wrote that in response to a policy that came out for our church that said that guns would be prohibited on the property. Okay, I realize that this is an insurance thing. This is basically unenforceable. Doctrine from the pulpit. It was, in my opinion, more of an insurance liability deal. But nevertheless, it prompted me to write this thing. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, when people are sitting in church, what's the one thing that they do that makes them more vulnerable than everybody else in some place you go? It's the fact that almost 100% of the people in there, when they pray, close their eyes. And rightfully so. There's nothing saying there's anything wrong with that, generally speaking. However, this is 2019. This is 2020 for all practical purposes. It's not 1960. During the 1960s, best I can tell, there were no church attacks. Maybe in the Deep South, I don't know. I didn't really see any noticeable shootings in churches. I mean, there were some burned before that, but I didn't notice any shootings before the mid-90s. No, I'm sorry, early 90s. And I'm confident that there was one or two small, insignificant ones somewhere, but I couldn't find them. But since we are living in different times, and I've talked about some of the way I've changed a lot of my training now, is instead of always going for two shots to center mass and then one to the head if that didn't work, now we're going right straight to headshots more often than not. We're not spending quite as much time on, we do for speed purposes, and, you know, for getting the holster out and pulling the trigger, but then we fine tune that a little bit and spend more time on hostage rescue targets and on headshots, you know, designated headshots and whatnot. And the reason for that is a couple of things. One of them is it immediately eliminates the threat. The second thing is if that person has an explosive vest, you have to shoot them in the head. This is not optional. You don't want them, number one, you don't want to shoot them in the vest. Number two, you don't want a failed headshot or a body shot in the shoulder or whatever, pelvis, upper chest, whatever, and let them still be able to yank the chain, you know, pull the rope, push the button, whatever it is that they need to do, dial the phone, push send, whatever it is to make the bomb go off. So you have to shoot them in that cranio-ocular cavity, cut the string to the puppet, turn the lights off, and everything goes away. Third thing, in a situation like this, would be the fact that the head is generally sticking up above everything else. People are screaming, people are running, people are crawling, falling on the floor. The one target that you might be able to see clearly, or at least partially clearly, would be the head of the bad guy. Practice shooting it. That's where you get all your points. That's where the payoff is. So that's why we're doing that. So, back to what I was saying about praying here. One of the things that you can practice easily on this, just to see if I'm full of it or not, is to take a chair out to your face. I wrote a thing on this. I wrote a thing called See No Evil, Shoot No Evil. And I just posted it. I've never posted it before. I've shared it with a few people, and I put it on my blog, but I've never put it on Facebook or shared it anywhere else. And today I thought it was a timely thing. I thought it should be shared today. So the basic idea here is that if you have your eyes closed, number one, you can't see what's going on. If something happens, you have to open your eyes, let your eyes adjust to the light, focus to the distance, find out the direction, and then address the threat. Guys, generally this is not the most efficient way to deal with this. You can listen to the prayer. You can be respectful. You can be just as, you know, religious or whatever you, and leave your eyes open. All of us are not going to do that. You have to understand that. There are the sheepdogs. There are the protectors. There are some that are born this way. We have to do it. It's not optional for us. We just do. And there are those that insist that if you're in the church that you will be protected, you'll be taken care of because you're in the church. We found out yesterday that that's not necessarily a fact. So some of us need to pay attention to what's going on. And a good way to test this is to take your favorite shooting buddy out with you, or two or three or five of them or whatever, and take a chair with you out to a safe shooting place and sit down in the chair, clasp your hands together, put your elbows on your knees, bow your head, close your eyes. One of your buddies, or maybe you turn a radio on, or one of your buddies can just talk, you know, recite the Gettysburg Address, something, while your other buddy quietly takes a humanoid size and shape target out there and stands it at various distances and angles, remembering, you know, what is a safe angle to shoot. And then after your second buddy is back here safe, have one of them holler, Allah Akbar, or fire, or threat, or shoot, or damn it, or something. And you, being the protector and the only sheepdog in your congregation, are going to need to open your eyes, figure out where this is, let your eyes adjust, and see how fast you can address that target. Matter of fact, it might be a good thing to do first is to do this a time or two and time it with your eyes open while you're watching them place the target. See how fast. Now, you need to be concealed. And you need to stand, present your weapon, address the target. Do that two or three times, eyes open during the prayer, and time it. and then take a little break, go get a drink of water, come back and sit down again, do the same thing, only do it the way I told you to the first time. Close your eyes, clasp your hands in front of you, bow your head. I want you to stay that way for an absolute minimum of 30 seconds, preferably 45 seconds to a minute. Have your friend discreetly put the target somewhere, quietly put the target somewhere, and then come back and give you a signal to shoot. Do that two or three times. Check your times against the times you posted with having your eyes open and see what the difference is going to be. Now, one thing we've noticed, you know, many times during a defensive situation like this, many times a lightning fast draw or presentation is not necessarily called for. I mean, you whether you can do it or not may or may not make a big difference. In this instance this morning, yesterday morning, and lots of other times, but I'm just saying sometimes the draw is not that important. And a lot of people stress that, that's all in the movies, you don't have to do that. Well, it's not in the movies. Sometimes it's in a church in Texas. That's what happened yesterday. The quick presentation, we said, well, look at it. We had one failed presentation, didn't get it out at all. He's dead today. His funeral will be probably Monday because of his presentation. It was sloppy, he was not prepared, and he's now dead. The one guy who was the instructor, his presentation was quick, his shot was quick, his shot was accurate, and his eyes were not closed when this started. His eyes were watching this guy because he didn't trust him. Something was amiss, he thought. Wasn't quite right. So practice those things. We spend, for those of you that have taken classes from me, we spend quite a bit of time on the presentation. It actually, you know, we spend in excruciating detail while you're first learning it, and then throughout the rest of the class, I tell people for the rest of your life, from this day forward, from right now on, every time you take that gun out of the holster, you do it with a purpose. You do it dynamically, quickly, safely, every single time you take the gun out of the holster. When you go, if you don't practice at all, you should still get 365 good presentations on that handgun a year. Because every night when you go to bed, you should whip that gun out like you meant it, and then do whatever it is that you do with it for the night. When you get up in the morning, you put it back in the same way. If you don't get any training, any practice, any other way, do that. What was I going to say? Oh yeah, we were talking about the quick presentation. And that's what I tell people from the time that that I first teach you this. Once that I feel you have it down properly, I say, okay, from here on, AZ Bound, Yakima Glock, you know, there's several people on the chat room there that have taken classes from, will testify to that. Do it forever. Now, I'll tell you a good story. I don't know if I ever told you this before or not. My ex-wife was a diabetic. And, you know, she trained and practiced quite a bit, and then she got, you know, halfway decent. And went out to the range one time, and she was just sloppy, and it had been a while since we'd been out there, and it just wasn't working. I said, what in the world happened to you? What's going on? Well, after a little while of diagnosing this problem, we found out what it was, is during this time that we didn't go to the range, there were some complications with her diabetes, and she was going to the bathroom, going to urinate a lot. And, you know, she'd go in there and go to the bathroom like, you know, four or five, six times a day. And she takes her gun out and lays it on top of a cabinet that was in there and uses the bathroom, gets up and just kind of nonchalantly puts it back. And she got away from that that dynamic presentation and everything, and it showed after that period of time. Once we diagnosed that and figured out what it was easily repairable. But you have to practice these things. And sometimes the only practice you get is when you go to bed, or, you know, dry practice in your garage, in your living room or whatever. You know, you don't always have to go to the range. You don't always have to expend live ammunition to do it. You don't always have to wait for good weather. You can do this stuff anywhere. Be safe. Use the proper procedures when you dry practice. Let me go over those real quick for you. You're going to go to an area that is outside of your dry practice area. You're going to present that weapon in a dynamic fashion and unload it, clear the chamber, double check that visually and what do they call it? Stick your finger in there if you can. Some guns you can't. Check your magazine well, make sure it's empty and back in the holster. Take your other magazine out with your support hand and put it away. Put it all in a coffee cup or a saucer or box or something there. Check your pockets. Make sure you have no live ammunition going into your dry practice area. Tell yourself verbally, out loud, where you can hear it. Don't just think it, that the gun is unloaded and is now safe to dry practice. And then go on in your area. And then when you get into that area, you're going to have a dry practice target of some kind. Do not use light switches, pictures of your mother-in-law, or transformers on the power pole across the street or something. Use something that you can remove when you get through. Put it away so it's not a stimuli when you enter the room some other time with a loaded gun. So this dry practice target needs to be removed, put away, laid down, turned around, put in a drawer, whatever you do with it, after you get ready to leave. Once you've chosen your dry practice target, you go in there and dry practice for no more than 20 minutes, half hour at the very, very most. But I tell people 15, 20 minutes is plenty. If you start doing it too much, you start, your bad habits don't show up. They gradually show up, and you get fatigued, and you don't notice them. And then you start, you develop them, and you can't get rid of them after that until somebody notices it and helps you with it. So, if you want dry practice all day, that's great. But leave the room, go through the procedure, load your gun, go mow the lawn, go do a load of laundry, go get a coat, go do something, and then come back and do it all again. When you load your gun up, when you leave there, after you turn your target around, put it away, stop outside in another room where you left your ammunition, put your extra magazine back in its pouch, load your weapon, check the chamber, put the magazine back in it, back in the holster. Before you move your feet, tell yourself out loud that the gun is now loaded and is no longer safe to dry practice. And those of you that have been with me for a while, you've heard I have numerous stories about why we need to do that. For those of you that have not been with me for a while, just believe that it's, and maybe we'll go over that some other time. But there are a lot of true stories out there where people have, I'll tell you one right now that happened right here at a popular training facility in Arizona. There are many like this at other places, but I'm just going to tell you this one real quick. There was two guys, on the second day of their 5-day defensive handgun class, learning all kinds of new stuff. They're having a ball. So they're dry practicing, as we all do. We practice in motels and stuff. You know, certain procedures you go through, you be extra safe while you're doing this. And so they were doing their thing, dry practicing. They decide they're hungry. They're going to go down and get a hamburger. So they load their guns, put them back in the holster, put their jackets, their concealed carry, their concealment garments on, and go eat. Well, they get back and they say, you know what, let's do this one more time. Let's do this a little bit to, get all ready for tomorrow so we'll be on top of things. Okay, sounds like a good idea. So they unload their guns and they, gonna practice what they were taught here. So they're practicing their quick straw, their fast, lightning fast presentation. And what do you suppose in a motel that they're using for targets? Well, unfortunately, they're using each other. They're fast drawing against each other. And one guy had unloaded his handgun properly. The other one didn't. The other one removed the round from the chamber, put it in his pocket, took the magazine out, put it away, and now he's ready. Was he really ready? Always remove the ammunition source first. And long story short, single shot from his 45, center punched his buddy, his best friend of 12 or 13 years, and the last words that he heard his friend say is, "Why?" And that's what he has to live with for the rest of his life, for being careless. So don't be that guy. We could go on and on and on with that. But anyway, good dry practice for your, don't even remember where I was going with all that now, but good dry practice for your accuracy, your handling, malfunction clearing, all this stuff can be done during dry practice sessions. All right, well, I'm starting to stutter and fumble and goof around here, so I think what I'll do is get on out of here. And I'll be back on Friday. For those of you that are new, we have a show called Liberty Lounge on Friday evenings at 7 o'clock Mountain Standard Time. That's Arizona time. East Coast will be 8 o'clock. No, West Coast will be 8 o'clock. East Coast will be, no, that's still not right. Wow, I have so much trouble with this. If I start at 7 here, it will be 6 in California, okay? And in Florida, it will be 9. Got it? I think that's right. Anyway, look it up. 7 o'clock Mountain Standard Time right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. www.thesurvivalcircle.com. You can check out a lot of these stories and stuff on my blog also at swsa.com. And I'm sorry, swsablog.com. swsablog.com. And if you're so inclined, if you look up at the top right-hand corner of the chat room there, there's a donate button. You can donate to our efforts. Everything that we do here is out of our own pockets. We have no sponsors that have no say-so over what we say and what we do. Nobody gets offended. You get offended, turn your radio off and leave. You know, it's simple as that. You're not paying us. So little donation here and there sure don't hurt anything to keep the servers running and the websites paid for and the blogs location and all that kind of stuff. All right, with all that rambling being rambled out very efficiently, I'm going to get out of here, and we will see you all Friday for Liberty Lounge. Good night.
Well, that wraps up another edition of The Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for The Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me. No reconciliation.